Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the A3 Robot Nation podcast today. My name is Jim Beretta, and I am your host. We're broadcasting from Cambridge, Ontario today, and Apex, North Carolina, and Pasadena, California. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. And these four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. And I'd also like to recognize Painted Robot. They're our partners on the website, and they're also Zoho consultants. I'm very excited today because we have two experts that are involved in the Mars rover program, and I'd like to introduce Ian Stern. Ian Stern is from ATI Industrial Automation. He is the director of Force Torque Sensor Products. ATI Industrial Automation designs and manufactures robotic products and accessories that enable customers to achieve a high level of flexibility in robotic automation. ATI's robotic end effectors are found in thousands of applications around the world and are manufactured entirely in the USA. Ian directs the goals and objectives of multiple engineering teams to ensure that ATI is developing world-class fork torque sensing products. His prior experience at the company as a production engineer afforded him an in-depth knowledge of ATI products and process automation. Ian focuses on understanding the capabilities of ATI's force torque sensor and how they are deployed across many industries, overseeing applications, engineering, product development, and manufacturing engineering. He seeks to address the needs of industry, customers, and the future of automation by expanding ATI's force torque product family. He joined ATI in 2007, just after graduating from North Carolina State University with a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering. I'd also like to introduce to you Ryan McCormick. Ryan McCormick is a robotics engineer in the Robot Vehicles and Manipulators Group at NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL, in Pasadena, California. Ryan was the lead engineer for force sensors on the Mars 2020 Perseverance rover. He's now the principal investigator for Cold Operable Lunar Deployable Arm, or Cold Arm. Ryan joined JPL in 2014 after working in the robotics defense industry. Ryan graduated from the University of Nebraska with a bachelor's and master's degree in mechanical engineering. So welcome, gentlemen. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. So July 30th is a big day for both of you. Can you tell the audience why and how did you get here?
Yeah, so after many, many years of work, July 30th is the targeted launch day for the Mars Perseverance rover. Why did we get here and how we get here from ATI's side is that, for 30 years, ATI has been focused on making, industry-leading products for robotics, whether it's tool changers or force torque sensors. And, we really have a very strong focus on engineering and innovation. And, the idea of going to space really presents the ultimate challenge. And we look at that as an opportunity to say, if we can go to space and we can leverage, new technologies to do that, how much better can we make our standard products that we offer many different industries?
Thanks, Ian. And Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about, tell the audience a little bit about JPL and NASA and the relationship between the two entities?
Yes, JPL is a NASA center located in Pasadena, California, which focuses on robotics for space. They have a pretty long history of different space robotics going all the way back to Explorer 1, which was the first US satellite. They've also sent missions to study all the planets in the solar system, as well as asteroids, comets, and the moon. They were heavily involved in precursors for the Apollo mission. They're most famous for the Mars Rovers program. So these would include previous rovers like Spirit, Opportunity, and Curiosity, which is still running. They also manage the Perseverance rover, which was launching on July 30th.
And tell us a little bit about Perseverance. I mean, we all love the rovers, but what's different about Perseverance?
Perseverance is about a SUV-sized Mars rover, so six wheels. It will look a lot like Curiosity. But Perseverance is the first step in a potential Mars sample return mission campaign. So Perseverance is actually going to go and drill and collect rock samples and store these in sample tubes for us to someday bring back to Earth. That way we can use the best instruments in the world to study these samples here on Earth.
What is ATI's application here, Ian?
Yeah, so ATI really started this idea of going to space about 12 years ago with NASA has a program called SBIR, which is focused on spurring innovation in small businesses. And so it's kind of like a research grant type situation where, one of our engineers found the opportunity that popped up in this SBIR program to develop a sensor that would go on a Mars rover. And so, we jumped on that. And so for several years, really for the bulk of those, 11 or 12 years, was in several different phases of this SBIR project where we kind of developed the core technology behind it and proved that we were capable, got the equipment needed to be able to replicate, Martian atmosphere and things like that. And so that's really how we started. And so, much like how our four-stroke sensors used are in industrial applications or in surgical robotics, it's all about giving a robotic application or arm, the feel of touch, much like a person would have. So that's the principle. And I think as far as exactly how the sensor is being used on the rover, I'll let Ryan dive into that.
Yes. So this sensor in particular is used on the end of the sample handling assembly arm, which is located inside the rover. So there's a big robotic arm on the outside of the rover, which has a big drill at the end, along with other instruments. And that drill will go and collect rock samples into tubes. And then the big arm on the outside will pass the tubes back into the rover, where the sample handling assembly arm will go and grab the tubes and manipulate them. So the force torque sensor on here, it does a few things. One, it provides for fault protection. So if anything goes wrong, it can catch it early and stop and figure out a way together to get things going back again. But it also allows us to put these tubes into very, very small stations for different operations that go on them, like checking what's in the tube and sealing them. So it gives us a lot of force feedback to control to put these in very small areas. One kind of example I give is when you're putting a key into a key slot, you don't necessarily look where the key is. You kind of put it in and kind of feel what kind of different forces are on your hand with relation to the key, and then you adjust accordingly. And this lets the robot arm inside the rover kind of do that with the sample tubes.
Okay, so we've now used the force torque sensor and the external arm to dig up soil samples on Mars, and they're in tubes and they're stored safely. What happens next, Ryan?
So they're currently looking at concepts for the remainder of a potential Mars sample return campaign. So this would involve sending another lander to Mars. They would have a rover along with it. They'd go and collect these samples and then load it into a rocket. And that rocket would actually launch off of Mars, and an orbiter would be flying about around Mars, which would actually go and catch the samples. And then once the samples were inside that orbiter, it would clean them and contain them, and then it would actually bring it back to Earth. So there are two potential additional missions that would go along with the Mars 2020 mission to get these samples back here.
When do you think that this could happen for this mission to go and collect the samples?
The current concepts are looking for mid-2020s for launches for both the orbiter and the lander to then go and bring these samples back.
And I'll add one thing. When Ryan was giving us a tour around JPL a couple years ago, and he kind of mentioned this concept of what the future of bringing these samples back to Earth is, one of the most impressive things to me, or kind of mind-boggling things to me, was that the biggest challenge is that, they'll go and it's not that challenging to put another rover on Mars and get the samples out of this rover, launch these back up into the atmosphere. And then kind of the idea is that there's this thing floating around in the atmosphere that a rocket has to go and pick up. And so to catch, basically trying to catch a basketball floating around Mars, that's also apparently not challenging, but the biological aspects of how do you actually clean and properly, decontaminate, those samples and everything on this orbiting rocket before bringing them back to Earth to make sure that we're safe.
Ian, that sounds like a whole nother podcast.
It does, and it sounds like a podcast for somebody other than me.
So there is no reason that we believe that any of the samples would be hazardous or dangerous, but just to make sure we're going to treat them as such and take all sorts of precautions to make sure that nothing hazardous comes back into the Earth's biosphere. And there's people at JPL who have been working on this for decades, so I think we're in good hands for that.
That's great. Thanks, Ryan. Ian from ATI, is this your first product going to space, or maybe it's the first one you're allowed to talk about?
So, no, it's not the first application that we've had to go into space, you know, I think, but it's the first one that we've done where the sensor exists in either the vacuum or of space, or kind of referred to as the extravehicular activity. And so we did a project back in 2012 with NASA as well. NASA and GM collaborated to develop what they called RoboKnot. And the idea was, can they create a robotic astronaut? And so the RoboKnot 2 platform, and this RoboKnot is, it's kind of like the waist up of a humanoid robot. And so it has a torso that has all of the processing power and things, and it has two arms. And we have force torque sensors in both the shoulders and the wrist of both of the arms on that application. That robot went to the International Space Station and did different testing and things there. But the environment inside of the International Space Station is extremely different than the one outside of it.
And so what exactly is the ATI technology on the, like, we all know about your force torque sensors, but what's different and what's it going to do? And we Ryan kind of explained it before.
Yeah, and so the biggest thing with this application, that in a lot of ways, you know, if you go to our website, we have an article up and there's a picture of it. It looks much, much simpler than some of our industrial sensors. So there's no electronics on board. We have products that support every industrial field bus. But in a lot of ways, this is really about, you know, just taking everything to the extremes, from the material of the sensor body, the strain gauges that are on it, the bonding process, the testing process, everything that we coat all of those materials with, and then really the testing and calibration of it. And so, yeah, physically it looks very simple, but it's really about taking every specification and going to the extremes, from calibrating the sensor at -110°C, you know, is one example of that.
And you must have to make this very light. Like, did you start over, or was there things that you could learn from RoboKnot that you could put into the Mars rover?
So yeah, we really started from scratch. And so from having redundancy so that we can have multiple beams and really lose a lot of the strain gauge measurement capability and still be able to measure forces and torques accurately, to, you know, how we process it, how we calibrate it, and really everything from start to finish is different than our normal process.
You must have had some big constraints on weight as well, did you?
Yeah, so you know, weight, when you're having to launch something that goes into space, weight hurts you in a lot of ways. And you know, and so one of those is really one of the most extreme environments that the sensor ever sees is during the launch of the rover, and the G forces that it sees there. So, you know, the more the sensor weighs, the more load it puts on other components. And so all of the weight associated with that is really the extreme example. And Ryan, I don't know if you want to elaborate a little bit on the launch loads that we were looking at here.
Yes, the launch loads are pretty extreme and are amongst the most that we'll ever see during its operation. So the Mars 2020 will launch on an Atlas V rocket, which is a fairly large rocket to get you all the way to Mars for a payload of this size. And so you're trying to reduce masses and weight as much as you possibly can to get it there.
Tell us, Ryan, while we've got you, tell us the journey about designing and building and testing this tool from your side of the equation.
So we worked very, very closely with ATI throughout the process. We had weekly meetings with them. I also spent a lot of time going back and forth to ATI for helping out with things like testing. So as we kind of talked before, we had figure out a way to actually test this down to minus 110C and kind of do the normal calibration loads we normally apply on it, which is something completely different than what ATI normally does as far as temperature. It's challenging to do things for the first time. This is the first time we're having six-axis force torque sensors on Mars. And so we would try things. They wouldn't work out exactly how we'd planned. So we'd have to kind of go back and figure out ways to fix them. Overall, I spent a few months out in North Carolina throughout this process. Some of these include doing 24-hour shifts, watching chambers during testing. I personally carried the sensors back from JPL on an airplane. And so that was an interesting experience, having a Pelican case with flight hardware going back and having to coordinate with TSA. And you occasionally got some weird looks from people on the planes. While the sensors were at ATI and I was out there, there was a hurricane that was headed straight towards Raleigh, which is kind of rare. So we had to figure out how to safe all the hardware for this hurricane and how to try to get back to Pasadena before the hurricane hit. Back in California, we had experiences with wildfires, closing down roads to get to lab and to get to where the sensors are and having to safe them during those times. So we've gone through a lot to get to where we are, but we have a great sensor now that's bolted on to the rover, and the rover's about to go to Mars.
Well, that's exciting. That sensor has seen a lot of stuff even before it lifts off. Ian, from your perspective, like what have you learned? Obviously, a lot from the technology and exotic materials and testing. What else did you learn?
Yeah, just I think for us, learning the challenges of going to space and everything that comes with that, and just really the extreme environments, the materials that it takes to do that, things like simple things you take for granted, like an RTV coating that would, protect the strain gauges. So there's really very few materials that have a small enough amount of outgassing that can be used. And so, and these materials are, they're very expensive and they're hard to work with. And then the temperature extremes, so we had, to do the calibration of the sensor at minus 110 degrees C, we had to put a very large liquid nitrogen tank outside. And so we have all these hoses running into what is somewhat like our normal calibration equipment. But we have all of these liquid nitrogen hoses running through everything so that we can get the sensor down to temperature and also still keep it safe for engineers and technicians to be able to do the calibration process around it. So the safety aspects to achieve a lot of these goals. The redundancy is probably the biggest new technology that ATI took away from this, along with the temperature compensation work that we did. But really having the capability to detect failures and still be able to provide accurate force and torque data after this happens.
And how, I'm kind of wondering about how big a team that you'd have like working on this on the ATI side. Or did it touch just a lot of different departments?
No, so really a project this new and this specialized was done almost exclusively by engineers or engineering technicians. So yeah, at any given time, when we actually had sensors here and we were in the testing and calibration process, there would be one or two people from JPL and three or four people from ATI in the lab. And, interesting enough, Ryan mentioned 24-hour shifts. When we had these sensors that are potential flight-rated sensors. So we made a total of four sensors that could have been the one that went on the rover that were all equivalent. And so anytime any of these sensors were being tested, it could never be left alone. And in most cases, had to be manned by two people. So we would put the sensor in our thermal vacuum chamber, which simulates that Martian atmosphere with both temperature and pressure. And it would have to spend 48 hours in this chamber at the extreme, cycling back and forth in these extreme temperatures. And so we had to rotate our engineering team through to monitor all the equipment and make sure that, the sensors were, never saw a temperature or a vacuum level that wasn't within specifications.
I just wanted to ask a question about data. So you're obviously collecting data because that's what a force torque sensor does. are you actually receiving any data, or is that kind of a silly question?
Yeah, so through all of these tests, so at no point during all these times could we not monitor the sensor's data. So during all these tests, every second we're capturing the data, we're measuring the data from the sensor and recording it. And so we well exceeded the amount of data that can be transmitted by email, and have extremely large file transfers back and forth between JPL and ATI with just extreme amounts of data that we have for each of the sensors throughout the process.
Thank you. What's next for the future of space and robotics? And I'll throw this question to Ryan first.
So some of the next future missions we're looking at JPL are, some of the bigger ones are Europa Clipper, which will go to Europa to study the ocean under a big ice sheet, and Psyche, which will go to a metal asteroid. There are some concepts for some potential future missions, which are more in line with things we would use force sensing for, which are landed missions. A big push is for the moon, and I'm including human precursors for Artemis. So I'm the principal investigator on a project called Cold Arm, which is a robotic arm that can operate down at cryogenic temperatures, so down at liquid nitrogen temperatures. And so this is targeting a potential 2023 lunar tech demo for that. There's also big areas in in-situ research utilization, so both for prospecting, which is going and finding where these areas are, and then actually using these resources to make useful things for the moon, and areas like construction on the moon, so we can kind of do more 24-hour construction there, potentially, to get things ready for people to go there. There's also potential ocean world missions. So there is a concept for a Europa lander mission that would go to Europa, land on there, cut into the ice, and see if we could find any signs of life or past life there. There's also areas they're looking at, like Enceladus, to go and land there.
Well, that's just very exciting. I have to say, you've got a very cool robot job, right? Ian, what are some of your thoughts about some of the new applications, especially from ATI side, on force torque and future space?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we definitely have, with this kind of this project that helped us develop a lot of this technology, we definitely want to be a part of, future space missions. And I think that we've created a lot of capability to be able to do that in the future. Both working with JPL and NASA, as well as, other international space agencies around the world, we have several different projects kind of in the works. The reality is that, all of them take, these projects take many, many years to go from, concept to an actual launch state. So more to come from ATI and the force and the space applications. And then really, as we look at, taking all of the technology to the extreme, you start to look at what are the other applications around, on our planet that really need extreme performance and capability. And so things like deep sea applications, so the idea of robotic oil rig maintenance, and as we look at trying to take the next step into clean energy as a human race, I think we'll start seeing a lot of these offshore oil platforms needing to be shut down. And so can we make a force torque sensor that can operate at 3,000 meters depth, at the bottom of the ocean? And so there's lots of challenges there, kind of on the opposite spectrum of, you're not in a vacuum, you're in an extreme amount of pressure. And then a lot of the redundancy and measurement accuracy and things like that are really needed for the robotic surgery market, which is a big development. There's hundreds of robotic surgery concepts, around the world. And so lots of development there. And really, force sensing, just like it does in the industrial world, the idea of you can use vision to see what you're doing, but much like Ryan mentioned with putting a key in a hole, you only use vision to see where the hole is, but the process of actually interacting with, your environment, whether that's, on the surface of the moon, the bottom of the ocean, or inside of a human, it's that interaction with the environment where force sensing is critical.
Yeah, it's a very exciting opportunity. I would like to thank both Ryan and Ian for taking time out of your day to chat with our audience. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm happy for people to email myself at ian.stern@ati-ia.com or reach out to me on LinkedIn.
And I can be reached at my email at ryan.l.mccormick@jpl.nasa.gov.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. If you like this podcast, please rate us wherever you find your podcast. A couple of stars means a lot. If you have an idea or interesting company or technology, or you'd like to be a guest or nominate someone to be a guest, please send me a direct message on LinkedIn. Again, that's Jim Beretta. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for the auto production, my partner Janet, and our partners A3, the Association for Advancing Automation, and Painted Robot, our web, search, and Zoho integration partner located in Tavistock, Ontario. They're at paintedrobot.com.